Welcome back. Joined together by The Who. Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War is the book. Dr. Sebastian Gorka, my guest, when he comes back in just moments, we'll delve further. And we'll discuss the enemy masterminds. Who are these grand strategists of modern jihad? How are they radicalizing people so quickly? We are now learning that from the French Interior Minister, with regards to the terror attack in Nice, France on Saturday that killed 84 people, left hundreds injured, that Mohamed Boulel, yes, he had a history of violence, and yes, he had a history of mental health problems. However, French authorities have now detained or questioned five others, so it's possible that this was orchestrated by more than just one lone wolf. But the interesting aspect that's coming out of this is how quickly Boulel appears to have been radicalized. According to his family, or one neighbor, in fact, and his estranged wife, he only started visiting a mosque in April. Think about that. 3 months. And all of a sudden, he is a soldier in ISIL's army. So how do they become radicalized so quickly? We'll discuss that as well. And of course, finally, what is to be done? How can America, how can the West, this is not just America, how can the West win this war against jihadism? So when we come back, we'll discuss this, and then at the bottom of the hour, we'll open up the phones, questions and comments for Dr. Sebastian Gorka, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Sebastian Gorka stays with us, Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War. Let me ask you about the gentleman, oh, I won't use the word gentleman, the fellow that perpetrated this horrible, heinous act in Nice, Mohamed Boulel. Now, he's been described as someone who had a history of mental health issues, he had a history of violence, but, I mean, do we have enough to actually say that he was recruited by ISIS, that he did this at the behest of ISIS? I know ISIL has claimed responsibility, but anytime anything horrible happens that involves, you know, death and mayhem, it would make sense for ISIS to say, yes, he was one of ours. But can we actually link Boulel to ISIS at this point?
We don't have to. That's the wrong question. We're always, you know, that's especially the liberal kind of argument. Oh, well, it can't be a jihadi because he's not an automaton under, you know, remote control by Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi somewhere in Raqqa. I mean, it's totally irrelevant. This is a global movement that has a totalitarian ideology. Look at Omar Mateen in Orlando. There doesn't have to be any connection, physical or electronic, between ISIS and the man who executed the biggest terrorist attack on U.S. soil since September 11th. Why doesn't there need to be? Because he stops halfway through the slaughter of his fellow Americans, picks up his cell phone, and calls the 911 dispatcher. And what does he do? Despite the Attorney General's attempts, Loretta Lynch's attempts to censor the truth, to delete these words from the transcript, he takes time out of the attack to tell that dispatcher, I am doing this for the Islamic State. Allahu Akbar. Allah is the greatest. I am doing this for the new caliph, the new emperor of Islam. That's all you need. That's all you need. You don't have to have gone to a jihadi training camp in Iraq or Syria or Afghanistan. You don't have to be in email contact with some kind of handler in the Middle East. You simply have to avow the values of the movement, the same way that a communist subversive in America doesn't have to be in touch with the Kremlin during the Cold War to be a threat to America, the same way that a fascist doesn't have to be under the control of the Third Reich or be getting love notes from Adolf Hitler to be a fascist. This is the trouble. This is the narrative that we've been suffering from, that they can't be terrorists if they don't have an operational tie. Tell that to the families of the 49 dead people on that floor in that nightclub in Orlando, or the families of the people who were killed or wounded in Nice. This is about ideology, and the connective tissue between these subversives and these jihadis is the ideology of global jihadism.
How are they radicalized so quickly? The report is that Boulel only started going to a mosque in April. Don't know if that's true, but there does seem to be, obviously, a pretty swift method of radicalizing people here.
Well, you know, let's wait a little bit to get the full facts about the Nice attacker. Usually, you know, we've never seen a case of somebody being an upright citizen on Monday and then on Tuesday mowing down his fellow Americans or the fellow French citizens because they're radicalized. Usually there is a process that may not be visible to the people around them, but there will be a process of an individual going deeper and deeper down the path of jihad. I had the honor of serving as an expert for the Department of Justice during the Boston bombing trial. Even there, even with the younger brother, this wasn't a case of somebody being exploited by his older brother. This was an individual with thousands of pages of jihadi literature on his hard drive of his computer. I mean, I know because I read them. I was given the hard drive and I read them. This is an individual who spent months and months steeped in the worst propaganda, the audio tapes of Anwar al-Awlaki, the books of the key jihadi thinkers, and consciously going deeper and deeper down the path of holy war of jihad. So usually this is not a quick process, and I think we will probably find that that was also the case with the Nice attacker as well.
You mentioned Baghdadi, but who are some of the other masterminds and strategists for jihadi movement?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So this is the opening part of my book, Defeating Jihad. I want to convince everybody out there that the people we face aren't crazy and they're not random. They have a plan, and the plan is shaped by the works of some of the most important and deadliest jihadi thinkers of the 20th century. One I mentioned already is the Egyptian Syed Qutb, a Muslim Brotherhood author who wrote the pivotal book, Milestones, that we've captured on high-value targets all around the world. Then there's two more very important ones your listeners must be familiar with. Even if you don't buy the book, Defeating Jihad, you can check out their publications for free at my website, thegorkabriefing.com. That's THEGORKA, thegorkabriefing.com. The next one is a man called Abdullah Azzam, Azzam. He was important for two reasons. Number one, he was the true creator of Al-Qaeda. He created the precursor to Al-Qaeda and hired bin Laden as his deputy to prosecute the Afghan war and recruit Arabs from around the world as jihadi fighters against the Soviets. In 1979, he wrote a fatwa called Defense of Muslim Lands that made the religious argument that with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, jihad is now an individual and universal obligation of all Muslims. All Muslims. That document was the most important mobilizational tool to jihad until Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared the caliphate reborn 2 years ago from the Grand Mosque at Mosul and declared himself the caliph. And then the last one, the most important of all, if your listeners only read one book on the mind of jihad, it should be the Quranic concept of war, Quranic with a spelt with a Q, and that's written by a Pakistani general called Malik, S.K. Malik. And that book is the Bible of the jihadi movement. It's the combination of religion, strategy, and history. And it says quite simply that war has nothing to do with politics or government interests. War serves only one purpose alone, the reestablishment of the caliphate for the glory of God. In warfare, there's only one target. It's the soul of the infidel who must be converted to Islam or crushed. And then lastly, because the soul of the infidel is the only target that matters, Malik concludes that terror is the most effective mode of war. Not tank battles, not aircraft carriers, pressure cooker bombs at sporting events, flying planes into buildings, decapitating people, crucifying them. That's how the infidel will be defeated. Those three masterminds Qutb, Qutb, Azam, Azzam, and Malik, Malik, tell you everything you need to know about the threat to America and how deadly, deadly serious the stakes are.
All right, so let's begin the discussion on how we are to defeat jihad. You make the parallel between how America tackled or won the Cold War and how we must approach this existential threat.
Yes, so I was shaped by the Cold War. I grew up in the Cold War. My parents escaped communist dictatorship. They escaped Hungary during the revolution of 1956. And I found the template to win this war in the Cold War. And it's two documents that were top secret at the time. The first one was a telegram written by George Kennan on the ideology of communism, a secret telegram written to the government in Washington in 1946 when he was a diplomat in Moscow. And then after that, the president, President Truman, requested a plan be drafted, a top secret 60-page plan on how to defeat the Soviets. That's called NSC 68, National Security Council Document 68. Both of those classified documents have been declassified, and I reproduce them in their entirety in the book, and I use them as my template, my answer to defeating. The book is called Defeating Jihad, and the way to do that is three very simple things. Number one, we have to get politics out of the threat assessment, especially political correctness. No more censorship, no more deleting the word jihad when the enemy uses it, no more saying it's about jobs, it's not about ideology. We've got to speak truthfully about the enemy, talk about them as they talk about themselves. The Nazis were called Nazis because that's what they call themselves. Let's call the jihadis jihadis because that's what they call themselves, and talk about how these people are evil. So that's number one, truth. Second part of the plan, and I'm giving you just the thumbnail, but all the details are in the book. We have to empower our Sunni allies. We should not be the face of this war. White-skinned or brown-skinned or yellow-skinned Americans should not be the face of this war. This war should be fought by our Sunni allies who are suffering the most, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, the Sunnis of Iraq. But they are not going to come together to crush ISIS unless we help them and they trust us that we are there for the long haul. And in the last 7.5 years, they have come not to trust us. They don't believe us. They think we go into the China shop, break all the China, and then leave. The next president will have to convince them we are on their side and we are there to help them defeat the jihadis. And the last one is directly from the Cold War. How do you defeat a totalitarian ideology? It's not just by killing people. Body bags is not a good metric of success. We tried that during the Vietnam War. I have nothing against killing terrorists personally, but that's not the ultimate victory because you can kill a terrorist, and if 15 people volunteer to replace him the next day, you're just creating an endless cycle. So the ultimate victory will come when we delegitimize the brand of jihad, the same way that Ronald Reagan during the 1980s destroyed, literally bankrupted the ideology of communism financially and spiritually. We have to do the same thing with the brand of jihad. We have to have a giant counter-propaganda campaign driven by the White House, using our friends, using our allies, using proxies, that will finally make the lifestyle of jihad unsexy. At the moment, from the streets of Nice to the streets of San Bernardino and Orlando, this ideology of jihad is far too attractive, far too seductive. We have to destroy it if we wish to be safe.
How do you destroy this brand? I mean, communism was proven to be a failed system because it collapsed from rot and corruption, and the system economically it doesn't work. As Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money, and that's what happened. But how do you now we're talking about something that's almost metaphysical here. Rewards in paradise and for every infidel that you kill. How do you destroy that brand?
I'm going to take a phrase from my old editor at the James Group in the UK, a true genius on these issues. His name's Stephen Ulph, ULPH, and he really nailed it. He said, the greatest vulnerability of the jihadi groups we face today, doesn't matter who it is, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Al-Nusra, doesn't matter. The greatest vulnerability is their claim to authenticity. What does that mean? It means that all of these people, whether it was bin Laden, Zawahiri today, or Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, they say one thing and one thing most often. They say, we are the true Muslims. We are the best Muslims. Abu Bakr says, I am the defender of the Muslim faith. Well, that's a huge vulnerability, because who are the majority of the people that he is killing? Other Muslims. So how can he be the defender of the Muslim faith if he's burning Jordanian fighter pilots alive, if he's crucifying Sunni Muslims in Iraq who disagree with him? That's their vulnerability. We have to drive a Mack truck through the statement that they are the true Muslims, which isn't ideally our job, but we can point it out as well. We could point out how many people they are killing every day in Kabul, in Baghdad. Sooner or later, that very much weakens their position. But far more powerful is to support those very brave Muslim reformers that exist, who are not being supported by the U.S. government, but are risking their lives every day on the internet to push back on the ideology of jihad, saying, this is not my Islam. These people don't represent us. We should be supporting those people hugely. There should be a giant black propaganda campaign, just as we ran during the Cold War. During the Cold War, the CIA owned whole publishing houses in Europe. Why? To destroy the ideology of Karl Marx. We need to do the same thing today with the ideology of global jihadism.
That sounds like it's going to take a long time, Dr. Gwaka.
We could defeat ISIS as an organization in about 18 months if we had the requisite leadership in the White House. If we really redeployed our advisors, our special forces trainers, put a coalition together and helped somebody like King Abdullah take the fight to ISIS, we could crush the organization in a matter of months. Crushing the ideology, that's going to take a little bit longer, yes, but it is possible, and that's why the subtitle to my book, Defeating Jihad, is The Winnable War. It is winnable, but only if we are part of the solution. It is not an accident that in the 20th century, the two deadliest totalitarianisms we have ever seen, the responsible for the death of 160 million human beings, were only defeated when America stepped up to the plate. We defeated fascism. We defeated communism. And guess what? In the 21st century, it's going to take America's participation in this war to defeat the new totalitarians, the global jihadists.
Is there a concern that ISIS has actually bragged about this on their website, saying that they're going to recruit not just young Muslims that are looking for some epic mission, but even non-Muslims, maybe those who are disaffected members of the far left. Is it possible that this contagion could spread beyond Islam and just become sort of a rallying cry for anyone who's just pissed off about anything?
I'm not concerned about that. The snowflakes that go to the Bernie rallies are not going to pick up an AK and live in the middle of the desert. That's not my fear. And even Anonymous, I don't think wants to get out of their mom's basement to do this kind of stuff. The reason ISIS is so successful, and this isn't something that is well appreciated even in the intelligence community here in America, is what they're actually saying on the internet. ISIS is publishing more than 55,000 social media postings every 24 hours. They are crushing it in the social media domain. And it's not just about jihad. It's not like Al-Qaeda. It's not just about being a holy warrior. ISIS has locked onto something far more powerful. The real name for this group wasn't the Islamic State for Iraq or Syria, or the Islamic State for Iraq and the Levant. The real name for this group, what they call themselves, and this is where the acronym Daesh comes from, is the Islamic State for Iraq and Al-Sham. And your listeners should appreciate that Al-Sham isn't just a geographic descriptor. Al-Sham is the equivalent of Megiddo for Muslims. It is the site of the last war before Judgment Day. It is the eschatological land of the last holy war. That is why ISIS has managed to recruit 86,000 jihadis in just a matter of a couple of years.
All right, Dr. Gorka, I've got to step in. We'll take a time out, come back, and continue to discuss. We'll open up the phone lines, questions and comments. Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we will get to your questions and comments for Dr. Sebastian Gorka, Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War, in just a few moments. And I've got a few more questions of my own. I'd like to get his take on recent comments on Fox television by former U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich when he said that anyone who subscribes to Sharia law should be deported. And then we have this interesting accusation from a former FBI agent, John Guandalo. I've spoken to him on my own program several weeks ago. And his accusation, and I'm not sure if it has any credence, I'm just repeating what Guandalo told me. Former FBI agent John Guandalo claims CIA director John Brennan is a Wahhabist convert, a Muslim. I'll get Dr. Gorka's comment on that as well. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, sitting in from Coast's Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Dr. Gorka, when the former House Speaker Newt Gingrich appears on Fox television and says after the Nice terror attack, that Muslims who subscribe to Sharia in the United States should be deported. Does that help the cause in the war against jihad, or does it hurt?
Well, look, it's a bad choice of words. How are you going to test somebody's religion, really? I mean, how many people would pass a test for being... How many Christians in America would pass a real test for being a Christian? I much preferred what Speaker Gingrich said a little bit later. I think he, maybe the day after, he said the following. Anybody whose ideology supersedes the values of the U.S. Constitution is a threat to America. And I've been saying the same thing for years. I don't care whether you're an atheist communist. I don't care if you're a bigoted member of the KKK or whether you're a jihadi. If you have values in contravention to the founding principles of the Republic, you are a problem and a threat to the national security of America. That's the way to package this, and that is just common sense, Richard.
All right. John Guandalo, not sure if you've had any dealings with John, former FBI agent, Raising a Jihadi Generation, Understanding the Muslim Brotherhood Movement in America, is his book from 2013. He has leveled the accusation that the CIA director, John Brennan, when he was stationed, I believe, in Saudi Arabia, before he became CIA director, obviously, converted to Wahhabism, that he is a Muslim convert. Does it matter? Are you concerned? Is there any credence to that?
Look, John's a good guy, but he just pushes things a little bit too far, and that's not good for the cause of national security. There is no incontrovertible evidence of the director of the CIA's conversion to Islam. I'm sorry, and how can you ever know? I mean, what man can crawl into the soul of another man and know who he prays to? Nobody can do that. Only God can see into the soul of a human being. So, you know, I think, look, does it matter? I have the honor to work very closely with the U.S. military, with our Marines, our Green Berets, with our FBI agents. We have Muslims that are risking their lives right now as we speak for America, for the Republic, standing on the wall, hunting down the jihadis in America. The question is, does a Muslim respect the Constitution or not? That's the issue. And when Brennan recently testified before Congress, stunningly, he said 3 weeks ago, he has never, in his 30-plus career in the intelligence community, he has never seen the world as on fire as it is today. That's an indictment, a direct indictment of his boss, President Obama and Secretary Clinton, who was responsible for all the foreign policy mistakes made in recent years. Do we really think a Wahhabi Muslim would give that kind of testimony on the Hill? I very, very much doubt it.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Former Department of Homeland Security agent Phil Haney is saying that during his investigations, he was ordered to purge any references to Muslim Brotherhood if it would link that group to terror investigations. This is coming from obviously on high. Is that action, ordering the purging of these records, destruction of records, in order not to implicate certain Muslim groups, is that treasonous in your mind?
Oh, I was I'm glad you said it, because I was going to use that exact same word. Totally, absolutely, and utterly treasonous. As my good friend from the Long War Journal, an amazing website your listeners could check out, as my good friend Tom Jocelyn has testified before Congress, the kinds of things Phil Haney testifies to are all part of a much broader scheme inside the highest echelons of the U.S. government to have an active disconnecting over the dots. They don't want the American public to understand the connections. When you're scrubbing out the mention of the Muslim Brotherhood, that is an attempt to make you stupid. It's the same thing with the phrase lone wolf. There is no such thing as a lone wolf. Whether it's Omar Mateen, whether it's the Tsarnaev brothers, whether it's Major Nidal Hassan at Fort Hood, all of these individuals are connected by the connective tissue of jihadi ideology. These are attempts to make you not understand the threat, because the administration doesn't want you to understand the severity, in part because they don't understand it, and also because the administration is being undermined as we speak by bad actors. One of the most influential and dangerous ones is, of course, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, an organization that says it represents Muslims in America, which is not true, and which in a federal court 8 years ago was listed as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terrorism financing trial in U.S. federal history. An organization that CARE, my sources in the U.S. government have told me, this week is sitting on in meetings with federal agents about how you counter jihadism in America. That means the wolf is inside the sheep pen, and that's what Phil Haney is testifying to.
All right, let's go to the phones on the wildcard line. Wayne joins us in Chicago. Good morning. Welcome to Coast, Wayne.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Yes, I have a hypothetical situation for you, Richard, quickly. You are a rich man. You have a mansion like a mile, square mile, with land and everything. You have $100 billion in gold underneath that big mansion. That is March 2003. And I find out that you have that $100 billion under your mansion. Now, Richard, you represent no threat to me whatsoever. You're not scheming to hurt me. You're not scheming to kill me. No terrorism, no nothing. I decide that I want to get planes and drop bombs on your mansion to get rid of you so I can get to that $100 billion in gold. But you survive, and you want to retaliate against me for doing that to you. Now, who's the terrorist, you or me?
Is the mansion the World Trade Center Tower? Is that where you're going, and the gold underneath?
The mansion is a rock.
Can I take this, Richard?
Please do.
No, I'm asking Richard. Who's the terrorist? Who, you or me, Richard?
You're scheming to take the
he's
money under your...
Okay. He's
yeah.
saying that our...
Well, you're blaming... Yes, I'm gathering that.
Terrorism is okay.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that I'm understanding the parallel with what's going on right now, because we've already established that, you know, the jihadi movement goes back long before 2003. We're talking 1,400 years.
No, we're talking March 2003, when the United States invaded Iraq. So, again, when I bombed your house, when you planned nothing against me, who was the terrorist, me or you? But I'm bombing your house. You have absolutely no plans to hurt me whatsoever.
But that's the problem.
I could come and drop bombs on you trying to get to your $100 billion. Who's the terrorist, me or you? If you retaliate against me, you live through those bombings, and you try to retaliate against me.
Okay, but I reject. I'm not going to answer that because I reject the premise. It's not a valid comparison. We're talking about a jihadi movement that predates 2003. That's the threat.
Okay, before the United States invaded Iraq, Shia and Sunni were marrying each other, working together.
Yes, look at the Iran-Iraq War. Open a history book, sir, please.
No, they were. So it is the Western powers led by the United States who are causing all of this perpetual war. We are the cause of the influx
of
all
the Quran
coming into Europe.
Have you read the Quran?
Okay, I'm not talking about
the Quran, sir.
I'm talking about Western actions.
Answer the question.
The peoples of the planet. The Western actions against the Middle East. The neoconservatives, Project for a New American Century, they sat down and planned 7 countries they wanted to invade, starting with Iraq in this order.
Well, we've done all of those shows, respectfully, when we've done all those shows, and we'll do more on those. But right now we are talking about something that predates 2003. We are talking about an attempt to reestablish a caliphate that goes back 1,400 years. 1,400 years, long before there was a United States, long before there were foreign, misadventures. And granted, there have been some horrible mistakes, and the invasion of Iraq was one of them, no question. But that's not what we're talking about right now. All right, let's go to Carlos in Carson, California. Carlos, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, historically, the West, Western banks, Western corporations, the military-industrial complex, Western intelligence have had relationships with the Wahhabis. Look, 200 years ago, Wahhabi, who came up with a fundamentalist religion, Wahhabism, was mentored by British intelligence. The Saudi royal family in the 1900s created the Muslim Brotherhood and the Muslim League, but the Saudi royal family had a relationship and had connections with the U.S. government and the Western oil corporations who financed the madrasas who were teaching Sharia law to hate us, okay? Western oil corporations were financing that. Western banks were putting the Muslim Brotherhood in business. And the military-industrial complex today makes a lot of money after wars in the Middle East. The Saudi royal family, who has relationships with the military-industrial complex, is financing all the terrorists over there. If it wasn't for these connections, radical Islam would not exist today. They would not have the money to do anything. Follow the financing, follow the money trail, and you will see we are the culprits. The United
States. How much do you think the attack in Nice cost?
We formed the
Ask the question.
We are the culprits.
How much?
Okay, Carlos, he asked you a question. How much did the attack in Nice cost?
Attack where?
Nice, France.
In France, look.
How much did it cost?
I don't care how much it costs. Who finances the
How much did it cost?
We do, sir.
The price of renting a truck, that's what it costs.
Western powers, Western banks, Western oil corporations finance them as brothers. They would not exist if it wasn't for our financing. Follow the money trail. Stop giving all kinds of deceitful information to the public. You work for the CIA, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah, and I've got my tinfoil hat on as well. I work for the gray men and the black men and the grays and the men in black.
All right, let's move on to the next caller, wildcard line again. Dave is in Lake Tahoe, California. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Good morning, Dr. Gorka.
Good morning.
Before I ask my quick question, I'd like to make a quick comment. Whenever Sebastian Gorka speaks, whether it's on any of the major networks or CNN or Fox, I stop what I'm doing to listen because this man gives the straightest information of anyone I've heard. And I am a political junkie, so I just want to pay you that compliment.
That's very kind. Thank you, sir.
Okay, my quick question is, Hillary Clinton claims that the to resolve this problem with the radical jihad movement, it's going to take better information sharing. Who in the world is going to share information with someone who has been found by the FBI to be reckless and negligent in her behavior? Could you answer that question for me, sir?
Yeah, it's a superb question. When she said after the Nice attack that we need an intelligence surge and more sharing of intelligence with our allies, I immediately thought, what ally is going to give their, you know, their grandma's secret recipe for fried chicken to Clinton? I mean, just forget about it. What the person who wrote that speech for her, I hope they've been fired. Nobody's going to give if Clinton becomes president, nobody's going to give us anything because of her homebrew server. The irony of that comment couldn't have been higher. So it again just demonstrates how disconnected this woman is from the reality around her, and the disdain she holds us in, that she thinks that we're going to take seriously any suggestion of that ilk. It really tells you everything you need to know about the senator from New York.
All right. Thank you for that, Dave. And east of the Rockies, Joanne is in Nassau County, New York. Joanne.
Yes, good evening, Richard. Well, good morning, Richard. And
good morning.
Dr. Gorka, hello. I always catch Dr. Gorka whenever he's on TV because he's one of the few people who I understand, agree with, and believe on this subject.
Thanks.
First of all. Second of all, with regard to Muslims and reaching out to Muslims, I think it's a greater insult to Muslims. I'm not Muslim, but it's a greater insult to Muslims who are sympathetic and afraid of this with us, not to be differentiated from the monsters who are doing this. I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that the first victim of this truck terrorist attack was a Muslim woman who is the mother of seven children. And so this is something that, you know, we all have to understand as well. The next thing is that people should be really angry. People should be really angry that they're being told by their leaders that they don't want to declare a war with no promise of any collateral damage over there. And we're being told that we're the acceptable collateral damage, that we have to lay down and take this kind of thing. And that's pretty much all I have to say. I mean, listening to what the president said, he was like, gee, sorry, France, it happened again. And then the whole thing turned into a 15-minute or a 10-minute, however long it was, tirade on how we should not lash out against Muslims. The American people are not like that. I mean, I haven't heard of people going through the streets and looking for a scapegoat.
Oh, no doubt there will be some of that, unfortunately.
There will be some. Just like there are ignorant people who belong to every class. But I haven't heard of widespread riots like that. You know, we have enough problems of our own here.
All right, Joanne, I've got to run. I thank you so much for your call. Dr. Gorka, how can people get a copy of Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War?
Yeah, Defeating Jihad is available at Amazon.com. Your hardback, you can get it on Audible, you can get it on CD or Kindle. And if you just go to my website, thegorkabriefing.com, T-H-E-G-O-R-K-A, thegorkabriefing.com, you'll find a link there as well. So bookstores, Amazon, Defeating Jihad is available everywhere.
How is this book being received by, very quickly, your Muslim colleagues?
Yeah, look, I worked very closely with our Muslim allies. I taught for 6 years in the Defense Department with Muslim officers from around the world. They're fighting jihadis back home, and they get it. So, you know, I never get pushback from them because only the Muslim Sunnis understand how bad this threat is, and they understand it. So, I love them to death. The Jordanians are some of the best individuals out there, hardest special forces guys.
Okay.
Egyptians, good people.
Dr. Gorka, thank you so much. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Lex Lonehood, Greg Bishop, Sean Lattisor, Jeff Duray, and Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Scott Guest, Nathan Smith, Caroline Podolak, and Alonia Kravtsova. Thanks for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett.